Hey there, you're listening to What the Riff? Join us as we remember the great rock and roll hits from a month between 1965 and 1995. We're going to riff on all things about the bands, the members, and the goings-on during that time. We hope to inspire you to find and download the songs you hear today, whether you're fans who forgot about some of these tracks or maybe never even heard them before. Check out our blog at whattheriff.com or follow us on Facebook at What the Riff. Here's a shout out to our sponsors, Right Column Financial, offering CFO and bookkeeping services for small business, Stanton Electric, a commercial electrical specialist, and Marbury Creative Group, a brand development agency that helps companies tell it better. So let's turn up the volume and enjoy this episode of What the Riff?
The Dow Jones closes above 3,500 for the first time. Boeing 727 crashes into the mountains at Medellin, Colombia, killing 132. And Major League Baseball's Carlos Martinez famously hits a ball off Jose Canseco's head for a home run. This is May 1993, and we are What the Riff. I'm Bruce.
I'm Brian.
I'm Rob, and with us today is friend of the show, Wayne the Monkey Man Baxter, owner of Monkey Wrench Brewing in Swanee. Welcome, Wayne.
Thanks, guys. Let's have fun.
Hey, all right.
Rob, what are we playing today?
Oh, man. I am so excited to share this album with you guys. This is Brother Kane. And I stumbled on this when doing research for rock singles on the charts in 1993. I didn't remember them, but I downloaded the album, and I like them so much, I had a hard time figuring out what I wanted to cover. You listen to that sound. Isn't that a cool?
It's an interesting sound. It's got a little bit of that Seattle sound going, but it's more melodic. It's not quite grunge.
I agree, and I was thinking southern rock and grunge.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
A little bit of that.
I was thinking the same thing, Rob. When you had this up, I was like, Brother Kane, I don't know if I know this group at all.
Right. Well, who do you think they sound like? Like, is it another band?
I can't just pick one. I'm thinking several.
Yeah, me too. Like, I was thinking Black Crowes, okay. Soundgarden, Tesla.
Mm-hmm. That's who I was thinking, though, it was Tesla, but I can hear some Bon Jovi in there, too.
Yes, exactly. And even a little Gary Cherone from Extreme in Van Halen.
Yep.
I mean, his voice is pretty cool. So this song is called How Long. And it started off really slow at the beginning, and then it just got going, and you can hear that guitar riff. That's kind of a Soundgarden.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a Soundgarden sound.
I think the guys are a southern band, aren't they, from Alabama?
Yes.
That's cool.
Absolutely, yeah.
You go, Wayne.
There you go, Wayne. You got it. The members are Damon Johnson on lead vocals and guitar, and he is from, where is it? Monroeville, Alabama. On tour, they performed this song. They would normally do a cover of the Allman Brothers' Whipping Post as one of their last songs, and then they moved to this one to kind of create a jam session in the middle here.
Okay.
And they just keep going, you know. How long, my brother, can we turn away? It's interesting. You mentioned Alabama, and Damon Johnson started out in a garage band called Renegade. It was in the eighth grade. Then he went into ninth grade talent show, played Cat Scratch Fever. Everybody went crazy. Goes, I'm going to do this for a living.
Oh, yeah. If you get people cheering for you at ninth grade, that's a good sign.
Yeah, but did he wear the loincloth that Ted Nugent wore?
I don't know about that. I didn't have any video footage. He played in a number of bands in Northeast Alabama, played at a club called PJ's in Gunnersville. He was in the band Split the Dark. He met in Birmingham, went with a band out of Atlanta called Witness in 1988, and they asked him to become the lead singer. He wasn't comfortable being lead singer, but they said, let's try it. And then he started performing with the bands Chinatown and Child, C-H-Y-L-D. Do you remember those names ring a bell?
Mm. No, that doesn't.
Well, they got a deal from A&R Records in 1990, and He took over the lead vocals in Child, and they changed the name to Brother Kane. That's a pretty good guitar there, isn't it? That's Roman Glick on guitar. Damon Johnson's playing guitar also. Glenn Maxey on bass, Scott Collier on drums, and cowbell. You will hear cowbell.
Get out of cowbell.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Rob, is this their debut album?
This is their debut album, and it's a great one.
Are they related to Sister Hazel at all?
It sounds a little bit like it, yeah. But they sound like so many. Now, listen to this second track. This is actually the lead single off of the album, and this is called Got No Shame.
Oh, channeling their inner Blackfoot.
Topper Price on the harmonica here, a local Alabama guy. Let's listen here. There's your cowbell, Wayne.
Ah.
This one just, it's rocking.
Oh, yeah.
This song is the one that was on the charts in May of 1993, and that's how I found these guys. It made it all the way to number 2 on the Billboard Mainstream Rock chart in September of this year. But it first appeared on the charts in May of 1993. Johnson wrote this with a guy named Marty Fredrickson in a Howard Johnson's hotel room, and Fredrickson went on from here and wrote Jaded for Aerosmith and a song called Undo It for Carrie Underwood. So he's made it pretty big. I just love that cowbell.
More cowbell.
They might be on Saturday Night Live sometime.
Yeah, exactly. I read this on an article from AJ.com. Johnson thought the band needed an energetic rocker to open with, something like a southern version of Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle or The Crows' Sting Me. He came up with this line, I take a left turn back down the right road.
Oh, there we go.
Right in his car. Yeah, this album has 11 tracks on it, and like I said, I downloaded it and I started listening to it, and honestly, I had a really hard time picking which 4 songs I wanted. So I just went with the first 4. But not in order. This is the song that opens it.
Okay. Yeah, see, this means it sounds like more of a southern rock.
It does.
Genre.
Yeah. The first one that you played, I definitely felt the
grunge.
Seattle.
Grunge.
It had the Seattle feel. Yeah. But this one, yeah, this is much more southern rock, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the harmonica kind of tipped it off for me.
Well, you have a harmonica, you're pretty much doing southern rock, right?
And cowbell, too.
Yeah, cowbell as well.
We might bring a Jethro Tull flute out next.
Yeah. I didn't know this, but they opened for Van Halen on their tour in 1995.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Was that the Gary Cherone era? It would have been right there at the edge, wouldn't it?
In the late 90s was Gary Cherone.
Yeah, because the Greatest Hits album for Van Halen came out in 97.
These guys do have a good sound.
Oh, yeah. Very clean.
That's why I'm surprised they didn't go any further.
Now, are they still touring today?
No.
Okay.
They really had kind of their run here up until about, I think it was in the late 90s. They broke it off. Well, interestingly enough, Damon Johnson, after this, he went on tour with Alice Cooper from 2004 to 2011. So he was touring with Alice Cooper playing guitar.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, in the band?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he joined Thin Lizzy, and I think that was in 2012, and he still plays with Thin Lizzy today. So he's out, Damon Johnson is out playing, but with Thin Lizzy.
He got out, you mean?
Yeah.
Jailbreak?
Yeah, exactly. It was a jailbreak, Wayne.
Well, you know, he has to be included when the boys are back in town.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a real rocker for sure. This is called Hard Act to Follow.
As opposed to a hard habit to break.
That's right.
Yeah. This one kind of has a little bit of All I Need is a Remedy.
Yeah, Black Crowes. I can see that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I kept thinking, who does this sound like? What do you think, Wayne?
I would listen to the James Gang and the Tommy Bolin era. James Gang Bang.
Yeah.
Sounds like some of the Tommy Bolin.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. He said that Damon Johnson says he was influenced by Chet Atkins, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, and Johnny Cash when he was growing up.
Outlaw country.
Yeah. I was reading an article. It was in. It was by a guy named Matt Wake on AL.com. And they were talking about their influence ranged from Aerosmith to the Allman Brothers, so they gave credit to them.
Mm-hmm.
But two more recent groups were Johnson's biggest inspiration at the time, the Black Crowes and Guns N' Roses. And they had success with this album, and their second one was Seeds in 1995. And they had a couple of hits on it. And then Wishpool in 1998. So 1998 was their last one. In 1993, I was listening a lot to 99X and a little bit to 96 Rock here in Atlanta. And so I did like the grunge feel. And I did listen to Guns N' Roses. And I did listen to the Black Crowes. But I just didn't... I didn't remember this band.
This was a hard era for a, you know, more straightforward hard rock group to make it. You really had the grunge was on the ascendancy.
Oh, yeah.
You had a lot of that alternative kind of sound coming out, the Cranberries and such.
Yeah.
So I can see where it would have been difficult for a southern rock or a hard rock group to kind of break through during that time.
Yeah. Wayne, did you listen to much alternative, or have you remained true to the classic rock?
When I lived in Denver, my roommate wouldn't let me listen to my classic rock albums, so I started getting into reggae and all the new wave music in the 80s.
Well, I'm with you on the new wave, Wayne. Which one was your favorites?
We used to go crazy and go see the Fix and U2 and NXS.
Yeah.
Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that this 93 would have been right in there in the Braves worst to first era.
Oh, yeah.
And so folks would have been, I believe it was it 93?
When, it was 93,
when the worst to first. Was that the worst to first season? No, it was 91.
91.
91 was the worst to first, but it would have been in the heart of that Braves period.
I thought you were talking about the Z93 radio station that had the classic rock as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I think that the, the drumming on here, Scott Collier, he's just doing a really good, he's got a pretty hard hit the way he's hitting those drums. I mean, they just sound pretty solid.
Little Bonham-esque.
Yeah.
Now these guys are, these guys are crisp. I do love the sound.
Well, if you like these so far, download the album. You'll like every song on it. I promise you. So this last one I'm going to end with is called "Don't Turn Your Back on Me," and this definitely has the sound of a couple of bands that we've talked about, I think. But it starts off with a really funky organ.
Yeah. That's kind of got that wall of sound too, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, there's a lot going on. So who do you think this one sounds a little bit like?
I'm going to say Bon Jovi again.
Yeah. I thought so too.
Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
Exactly, Wayne. Yeah. I mean, I can almost hear Axl Rose singing this.
His voice.
Yeah.
A little too low for Axl Rose, in my opinion. Axl Rose is more in the higher tier.
You're right.
He's got quite the range.
He does.
You'll hear a little tribute to Peter Frampton's vocoder here in a minute.
Oh, yeah?
Listen to that key change.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
That's the part that sounds like Bon Jovi to me, like something mm-hmm. Bon Jovi would do. Well, the name, Scott Collier, the drummer, was talking about the name in an interview. He said, once we got the four guys we wanted, we started throwing band names around that better suited us because it was Child, C-H-Y-L-D. And he said, we were close friends. We were like a brotherhood. People tend to think there's always a cool story about band names, but a lot of times it's just the name you fall upon and everybody goes, okay, that sounds cool to me. So somebody literally just put out, how about Brother Cain? Like Raising Cain or something, I guess, but it's C-A-N-E. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
So no biblical implication at all there?
Not that I could find.
Brother Cain, produced by Abel Industries.
Yeah, this is very much Black Crowes, isn't it? It has that the voice.
Here's
especially.
That change again.
I like that. That's nice.
That's not easy to do.
No. I would have liked to see him on tour. I bet they were, you know, they're pretty tightly produced here for sure. They did tour with Aerosmith, and like I said, they were influenced by Aerosmith. Again, you can hear a little bit of.
Well, just right there.
Steven Tyler. Yep.
There we go.
Peter Frampton, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, you mentioned Got No Shame being a single. Are the rest of these, any of these singles, or are they deeper cuts?
No, they're deeper.
Okay.
They're deeper. You know, doing this podcast, it's so fun because you kind of discover somebody that you hadn't heard before. And then you listen, and you're like, instead of just listening to the song, I'm going to listen to the album.
I was going to
use Got No Shame as a staff pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listened to a couple other songs. I'm like, oh, man, I need to do this album.
Yeah.
And so I've collected everything. And this is probably to date what we're on. This is episode 211. And this is probably one of my favorite albums that I've covered.
Cool.
Just because it's new, different, you know.
Took us a while to get there, but we got there.
Yeah. Well, I also like, I did, you know, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Yeah.
And I really like that a lot.
Yeah, I saw Keith Emerson back in the day spinning around with the axis with the piano.
Yes.
He was a phenomenal pianist, wasn't he?
But that was quite the revolution.
Yeah,
sure.
They toured with Robert Plant also, by the way.
So. I wonder which tour, because I've seen Plant four times.
Yeah, you may have seen him at that point.
I'll be darned.
Well, that is cool, and I'm impressed with it being a regional, you know, there being the regional connection, being from Alabama.
Yeah, being from Alabama, and yeah.
I know what I'm going to have to put on my Spotify list now.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good call,
Rob.
Well.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed it. All right. Now we're going to move on to our entertainment track. And today's entertainment track is going to be brought to us by Monkey Ranch Brewing.
I recognize the song, but not necessarily the show.
What show was it?
Oh, this is the Wonder Years.
Yeah, the Wonder Years. That was a great show. Fred Savage was the kid.
Fred Savage got his start there, didn't he?
Yeah, and he was kind of telling about life from his perspective.
Yeah, we had some TV shows that were popular. CBS's Knots Landing. went off the air in May, and Cheers had its final episode in May as well.
Wow. Yeah, that May's when a lot of TV shows went off the air in May. Now we're going to go to staff picks, and this one is being brought to us by Brian. What do you have for us, Brian?
Gentlemen, I have a friend from Canada that we're going to play for you now.
Debbie Gibson.
Oh, no, we're not going to do her. We're going to do a guy by the name of Jeff Healey. Do you remember that? From the Jeff Healey Band?
Oh, yeah.
He was born Norman Jeff Healey. Norman Jeffrey Healey, actually. And he was adopted at a very small age. So, at a very young age, he was stricken with a disease that caused him to go blind. He started playing guitar, if you can believe it, at the age of three.
Three?
Three.
Can you even hold a guitar when you're three? That. That's a little early, isn't it?
I know, isn't it amazing? Started playing guitar at the age of three. And so, obviously, he didn't let his handicap stop him from doing something that he loved. And so, this
and
song...
And the name of this song... Go ahead.
The name of this song is Lost in Your Eyes.
Which it's is from, why I was given the Debbie Gibson reference.
Right. And actually, gotcha. I think this song was in... If it wasn't released at the same time, it was very
it was close,
shortly close to, you know. So, this is from his third album called Feel This. You know, like I say, he's being from Canada, he was influenced by a lot of people. He was born in Toronto, as I mentioned. But he began playing his unique style, and according to Wikipedia, the source of all truth and knowledge, he did a lot of playing, you know, the guitar in his lap. So,
oh, like a dobro.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it was just an interesting thing that,
yeah.
So when you hear him playing his guitar, that's what he's doing. Usually it's in his lap.
Well, his voice sounds like, I'm thinking if it's Jackson Brown a little bit or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got, because I don't remember this song, but I remember his voice, I think.
Yeah, I'm the same. I definitely remember the Jeff Healey Band, but I don't remember this song. Was this a single or is this a deeper cut?
This is released as a single. It went up, I forget how far it went up. It wasn't one of those things that you can see in the top five or the top ten, but it was on the charts. That's where I saw it. But at the age of nine, his musical talents were showcased in an interview on TV Ontario. And it's a children's program called Cucumber. So he was actually on there. And then when he was 15, he formed his first band called Blue Direction. Listen to these ages, I'm telling you. Starts playing guitar at three, goes on a TV show at nine, and at 15 he starts his own band.
Pretty talented.
Absolutely. It's a four-piece band that primarily played bar band cover tunes and featured bassist Jeremy Littler, drummer Graydon Chapman, and Rob Quayle on the second guitar, and the band played at clubs in Toronto, including the Colonial Tavern, which I'm sure is one of the bigger taverns in. But again, these guys are 15 years old and playing in these taverns and things. So,
now, was he, did he do some blues numbers? Because for some reason, and it's hard when you're, you know, you've got the song in your ear, but I'm thinking, when I think Jeff Healey Band, I'm thinking blues for some reason.
Well, he did, but he had a love and passion for jazz.
Okay.
And so this does sound bluesy, but as he got older in his career, he went more to jazz.
To the jazz, okay.
As a matter of fact, he began hosting a jazz and blues show on radio station CIUT, where he was known for playing from his massive collection of vintage 78 gramophone records. So he... Very active, and you know, he did, like I said before, he did not let his handicap stop him from what he wanted to do. He was signed to Arista Records in 1988, and the band released the album See the Light, and it featured his hit single Angel Eyes, which you're probably referring to, and the song Hideaway. So, unfortunately, in January 11th of 2007, he underwent surgery to remove metastatic tissue in both of his lungs, and then 18 months later, he's passed away. So
That's a shame.
Yeah, died at the age of 41.
Well, that is too soon.
Too soon. It wasn't 27, though, like most of the rockers.
True.
All right, so now we're going to go on to a staff pick from Bruce. And what do you have for us, Bruce?
We're going a little easy listening on this.
Boy, you guys are picking a little light music. Wayne and I are sitting over here going, stay engaged. Stay engaged.
Wake up, Wayne. Wake up.
This song, This Is Jesse by Joshua Cadison. It's the lead single and the leading track from his debut album. Debut album is Painted Desert Serenade. From a phone booth
in Vegas, walking in Memphis.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
I'm glad you said that.
Yes.
Because he reminds me a lot of Mark Cohn.
Yeah.
That's kind of who he reminds me of. This song went to number 26 on the Billboard Hot 100. And Cadison is a singer-songwriter, pianist, and writer. The songs on this album, they're all ballads or soft rock.
Yeah.
But there's more sophistication to them than the average long love song.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like this one, Jesse is about... Jesse is this girl that the guy can't get out of his mind, and just when he's gotten out of her life, she comes back with this grand plan, you know? And so that's what the chorus comes in with the plan.
Okay. Not, I wish that I had Jesse's girl.
Yeah. Not
if you
Jesse.
Were going to say it, I was.
Well, I mean, it's funny. This type of music, both of these songs, like they're over 5 minutes long, which is interesting that they were, maybe they didn't get a whole lot of radio play because of that, perhaps.
Well, and this, the 93, we're in the CD era, and the songs are getting longer, and you're getting more tracks. You know, CDs would have, 72 minutes of music, and your average album had more like 40, 45 minutes of music.
Yeah. Well, what do you remember what you were doing in 1993? What was going on in your life?
In May of 1993, at least for me, we were new residents about 6 months in our subdivision. We just moved out of 3 years ago, so we had an 18-month-old daughter and one on the way.
Where were you working, Brian?
I was still working at the same place I am now, which is Intercontinental Hotels Group here in Atlanta. And
we'll leave the light on for you.
Exactly. That's a different
motel. That'd be Motel 6.
Sorry.
That's
me to get you in trouble.
No, you didn't. But
how about you, Bruce?
Oh, we were in our first year of marriage.
Yeah.
So I was at Solvay Pharmaceuticals, but we were getting still kind of newlyweds. We would have had our first year anniversary the month prior.
Oh, aren't you still a newlywed, though?
That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
How about you, Wayne?
We had our third kid in 93, Lauren.
All right.
Yeah, my daughter. She got married at the brewery last October.
Oh, wow.
So,
that's cool.
Yeah.
I love that. Have a wedding at the brewery.
Yeah, it was
fun.
Do you
guys do that often?
We try to.
Yeah, that's cool.
We've had three, I believe, and a few rehearsal dinners and a bunch of birthday parties.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
It takes a special kind of mother-in-law to have a wedding at a brewery.
My wife's actually performed a ceremony the other day.
Oh, wow.
The couple couldn't find a priest at Lawrenceville because of COVID.
Oh, wow.
You know, the city shut down some. So she was a backup when my daughter got married, because my son married my daughter. And he was an Alabama. He's an Alabama guy.
All right, all right. Maybe he knows Brother Kane.
He probably does.
Rebel, what were you doing in '93?
I was trying to get the agency going, our second year, and just doing whatever work we could. I think that was the year we did the cheetah calendar.
Ah. Uh-huh.
We thought we were hot stuff. It was like we can't show that to anybody as a example of a sample of work that we did, though. Oh well.
Was that the same cheetah calendar that 96 Rock promoted?
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Okay.
Yeah, they did a lot of them.
Let me mention just a couple of other things on the song. The obviously he's piano based. You can tell the chord progression and things. It's not a guitar bass. It's more piano driven. But on those keyboards, Rod Argent is on keyboards. So he also produced this song and most of the songs on the album. And then Joshua Caddison wrote all of them. I loved this album when it came out. Now, it's all easy listening, but there's not a bad song on it. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I got this through BMI. You remember?
Yes.
Columbia House and BMI. I'm pretty sure I got the CD from there.
Did it only cost you a nickel?
Yes.
Mine was a penny.
You get five for a penny, and then later on you got to buy them at full retail.
That's right.
That's right.
But still, it worked out. It was cheap, cheap.
Yeah, that was good. Those were back in the good old days. All right, so now we're going to go with our guest here. And what do you got for us here, Wayne?
Cool song from U2. Actually, my son and I, his first concert was in 01 with me at the Elevation Tour.
Oh, wow.
So we had a good time, but I've always loved U2. When I lived in Denver, we named our dog after, but we called him Bono instead of Bono. It was early in the days, we didn't know how to pronounce his name. But this is a great song. It actually came from 7 years of marriage. The Edge broke up with his wife, and he had very difficult in Ireland. It's frowned upon to be divorced. And he had three daughters as well. But Bono didn't know really how to much about the pain of divorce, because he married his high school sweetheart and he's been with her ever since.
Well, wow, I didn't know that. Wow.
And the Edge kind of, I guess he moved up a little bit. He married Morley Steinberg, a belly dancer on their Zoo TV tour.
You could do worse than marrying a belly dancer.
That's right.
That's not bad.
It'd be a stomach-churning ride.
No. What album was this from, Wayne? Was this Octung?
I think it is Octung Baby. Yeah. And the Saltwater Kisses. You can kind of guess what that's about.
Yeah. You know, I like this version too. The remix. I love when they come in and release these types of things. You know, kind of like Alanis Morissette came out and did a remake all acoustic of Jagged Little Pill. I just love the variations that they can do with these things, and this is a great example of a remix.
Yeah, they actually went through quite a few versions. The newer version the band liked the best, more of an acoustic sound.
Yeah, that's what this is. The other one is more live. What a great band. I mean, the voice is distinctive, and they stuck together. I don't know if they liked each other or didn't like each other, but...
It's difficult. There are so few bands that have that ability to rise to the top and stay at the top, you know? You think about U2, that's in that same category with The Who and The Beatles and Led Zeppelin and folks like that.
And I covered this. I featured this album, you know, a year or maybe less, and to your point, Rob, they were at a point where they were just about ready to split. They thought they'd pretty much done it all.
Oh.
And they were kind of struggling about what to do.
Yeah.
And if you remember, when the Edge started doing the chords for One, and then they all looked at each other and go, "We've got something special. We need to keep it going." This interview is with Bono, and he's saying that was the song that really said, "Yeah, we've got it. We got to keep this going."
Wayne, what did your son think about the U2 concert?
Oh, he had a great time.
Yeah.
It was his first concert. It was down at the Omni, I guess.
It would have been the Omni or it would have been the Georgia Dome, too, because they were actually, you said it was 2001, right?
Yep.
When did they do
the Georgia Dome was open just before 92. The Olympics.
Yeah, it was 92.
Oh, okay.
Because I just moved here in 92.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, we toured the newly opened Georgia Dome.
Yeah.
It's kind of every concert you go to is a little bit foggy, you know, after a while.
Sure.
Yeah, if you remember it, you weren't there.
That's right. You kind of remember the beginning and maybe the end sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I won War, the first U2 album, on a call-in on 96 Rock. And I thought that was so cool. I got tickets and the album.
Where were they playing?
They were playing at the Omni.
The Omni, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see you two with a buddy of mine, Mark, at Georgia Dome.
Yeah.
I remember that show, too.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, War was the first album of U2 that I bought. Then I went back and got the other two, October and Boy, I believe.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. Well, thanks for bringing that. And to wrap it up with Stat Picks, this is a guitarist. His name is Brad Gillis. But you're going to have to figure out who he's playing with. Have a listen.
That sounds like Joe Satriani to me.
It does.
Love the bass.
Oh, Almond.
Greg Almond.
Greg Almond. This is Brad Gillis, and he's playing with Greg Almond. The song is called Honest to God, and it was on the charts in May of 1993. This is from the solo album Gil Rock Ranch. It made it to the top 20 in May of 93, and this song was co-written by Greg Allman.
That is an interesting sound because, you know, you've got the distinctive Allman's voice.
Yeah.
But then
the guitar is different.
The guitar is much, much heavier, yeah.
So you've heard Brad Gillis before.
Yeah, yeah. He's been in other bands, hasn't he?
Yeah, you heard him on a podcast that I featured the band in. He's most well known for playing with Night Ranger.
Oh, okay.
How about that?
Brad Gillis worked with Ozzy Osbourne in 1982 after Randy Rhoads died. And he came right in and within 2 weeks had learned every one of the songs.
Wow.
And played, you know, with the band and kept the tour going. Everybody thought that was really cool. This is not on Apple Music. I thought it was really weird that it was... It wasn't on Apple Music. It wasn't under Greg Allman. It wasn't under Brad Gillis. If you look up Brad Gillis, you'll see a number of projects, you know, and things that he did, but not this one.
Now, on this album, was Greg Allman on the entire thing or just this song?
Just on this.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like I don't even know how they knew each other, except that Brad Gillis was a really good, respected guitar player.
Yeah.
What do you think, Wayne?
They're probably jamming in a studio somewhere in a different room, maybe. And saw
that happens
other.
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I can't imagine two artists crossing paths in the hall. What are you working on? Hey, come in, take a listen, see what you think, and then something comes out of it. Isn't that cool?
Yep.
No. Nice little key change there.
One of the things that comes up if you look for Brad Gillis is a cover version of the Atomic Punk.
Oh, really?
I'd like to hear that.
It is really good, and it's from an album I didn't even know existed. It's called 80s Metal Tribute to Van Halen, and it's got 12 different bands that are playing Van Halen covers.
That'd be worth a listener to.
Yeah, I mean, go check it out. It's kind of funny. I mean, you know, obviously they're not as good as Van Halen doing it, but it's good to kind of hear.
It's an interesting take.
Yeah, you can kind of hear, and they're not all famous bands. I'm trying to remember what the most famous was. It was like one that I recognized the name of. The others are like Brad Gillis. They're great musicians who, you know, participated in music with other ones, and they just got together almost like a bunch of session musicians from different bands getting together and doing that.
Now, I'm assuming is Gillis back with Night Ranger because they're touring contemporaneously?
I believe that he is, but I can't say it with 100% accuracy. He was with a band called Rubicon before Night Ranger, like I said, he played with Ozzy for a while. He's worth looking into. And if you see stuff that he was involved in, you know, you'll appreciate it for sure. When I first heard this, I'm like, who is that voice? I know that voice. That's not Brad Gillis. It's kind of funny. All right. Nice. Well, now we're going to go to our instrumental or laugh track. And this is about a 2-minute instrumental. And it's a live one. It was recorded in April of 93. But it came out in May of 93. And this is from the album Once Upon a Time in South America. And it's Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
If it's only 2 minutes long, that's very unusual
it
for
is.
Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
You better get going on our facts about music.
I guess so. Well, a few things that came out. We had some albums that were released. You had Janet Jackson had Janet, New Order Republic, Radiohead, Pop Is Dead. That was a big one.
Yep.
Tool, Sober.
Yeah, I covered that.
Pearl Jam, Alive. Donald Fagen, Karma... What is that? Karmakinied.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, really.
That was a great CD, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like Donald Fagen.
Yeah.
Blur Modern had Modern Life is Rubbish, and Dire Straits had On the Night, and Robert Plant had Fate of Nations.
All right. Yeah. Well, this has been May of 1993, and you've been listening to What the Riff. I'm Rob.
I'm Bruce.
I'm Brian.
I'm Wayne number 2, the Monkey Man.
Thanks for coming and hanging out with us today, Wayne. Hey, everybody. Go check out Monkey Wrench Brewing in Suwannee if you get a chance. You'll love the vibe there, especially if you like What the Riff. And we're glad that you guys hung out and listened, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for listening to What the Riff. We hope you enjoyed the songs we had on tap today. Please tell your friends about us. Check us out at whattheriff.com and follow us on Facebook. Special thanks to our sponsors, Wright Column Financial, Stanton Electric, and Marbury Creative Group. That's all for this week. See you next week on What the Riff?